You're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at wicn.org. Good evening, I'm Al Voner, and this is The Public Eye. My guest this week is author and chess master Susan Polgar. Her new book is Rebel Queen, The Cold War, Misogyny, and the Making of a Grandmaster. And in this unique book, Susan Polgar describes vividly the tough time, the almost impossible time that she had becoming a great, she was always a great chess player, but getting that notoriety, being respected for what she did was not an easy task for women, especially in Europe where she was from originally. She's now a U.S. citizen, but between the pages of her new book, Rebel Queen, Susan points out the challenges and the hard work that went into achieving for many women today. She's a role model. She's a coach in the chess world and one of the most renowned chess players, female chess players in the world. So for the next half hour, we'll be talking with Susan Polgar. Susan, nice to have you with us.
Oh, thank you for having me. Good evening, Al.
This is, you and I talked a little bit before the broadcast, and I had mentioned that I think I was maybe 9 or 10 and, became enamored with chess. I thought, oh, this is good. You just have to sit there in a nice, comfortable environment. I don't have to get out there on a playing field and move these pieces. And if you're good enough, you might even get some notoriety out of it, but there's a lot more to it than that, and it just didn't pan out for me. But especially so, and I want you to talk about that, becoming a chess master, just mastering the game itself for a female, especially, a number of years ago while you were living over in Europe, must have been one hell of a challenge, right?
Yes, indeed it was, especially back in the early, mid-1970s when I started playing chess. It was a very, very unusual thing for women and especially a young girl to play chess. So I vividly remember the first encounter when my father took me a chess club and he was trying to get me a game to play against some of the guys there. And they were all looking at him like he's crazy, they were joking with him, telling him, like, come on, if you want to get a game with one of us, just say so. Don't use your little daughter to get a game. we'll play you, but you must be kidding to think that, a little girl can play against, any of us. So that went around for a little bit until finally one of the guys said, okay, I'll play her a game. When my father insisted that indeed he was looking for a game for me to play. And actually they were in for a surprise. Apparently I was pretty decent, definitely for my age. And I even ended up winning a couple of the games that night.
Now, the thing, as I pointed out, and I want you to just correct me if I'm wrong here. Now, you were born in Hungary, correct?
That's right, in Budapest, Hungary, and during the Cold War.
Okay, so a period where, as you said, the Cold War, and I'm sure some of the same attitudes that permeated here in this country was the same over there. That okay, you're a woman, that's fine. Stay home, take care of children, take care of the home, let alone becoming a chess master. So, as soon as you even showed any signs of having the ability to play this game, did you find from the very beginning that men especially were not anxious to let you move forward?
Definitely. And, that chess club, the little adventure incident was the first taste of that. And then actually I started playing in competitions soon after, still as a 4-year-old. And I won my first competitions in the district championship of Budapest for elementary school age girls. In fact, I won all my games 10 out of 10, and that created an immediate sensation in the local media and in the chess community as well. And then a year later, when I came back and my father wanted me to play with a tougher competition, that which meant playing against the boys, again in the elementary school boys championship. And again, I won the district championship and qualified myself to the Budapest final as the year before with the girls. Yet I was being told all of a sudden that I cannot play due to my gender.
Hmm. I can't put myself in your shoes, but I can only imagine hearing that. You've proven yourself. You've showed that you can, that you've mastered this game, that you've got the talent, you've got the ability to go a long way, and yet because of your gender, they're standing in your way. How did that make you feel?
Well, I was very kind of upset, obviously. As my father recalls the story, I was sobbing all the way home when, even though he tried to appeal and convince the mother wife to let me compete. And when they firmly said no, in fact, they started even threatening him that if he doesn't leave and stop complaining and appealing, they'll throw him down the stairs.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was horrible. I was very disappointed. But, eventually my father, when we got home and over the next few days, calmed me down and convinced me that eventually if I'll keep getting better and better and I will have opportunities to prove myself. And that became my focus, to get ready for the opportunities whenever I have them.
Let me ask, while you were learning, while you were gaining this notoriety, was it woman on woman, or were you playing, members of the opposite sex? Were you playing against men?
Well, mostly I was playing against men, largely because there were very few women playing.
Like right.
In those days, it wasn't unusual that I would be the only girl, the only woman in the entire competition, whether it's out of 10 or even 100 people. And I'm pleased to say that partly you, my pioneering work, we came a long way, and there are a lot more women playing, although it's still a largely male-dominated sport today.
Yeah, and I can only imagine being, exclusively at that time, basically a male-dominated environment. That alone must have made it difficult, because they weren't accepting a woman playing on the same level, a woman possibly beating them at a game that only men had played for so long. And then there's the other aspect of it, and I want to get your sense on that, it wasn't just the sexism. As you said, there were threats to you and your family. At the time, a hostile communist government, anti-Semitism, so many things that you would think that maybe even your parents would say, look, Susan, we love you. We know that you're so good at this, but they may harm one of us. They may harm you. They may harm the family. They may make life difficult. Did you and the family sit down periodically and talk about how do we overcome these challenges?
Yes, indeed, it was very difficult at times, for a long time, in fact, and I owe a lot to both my parents, who were willing to fight the fight for me to have a chance to succeed in my career in something I love. Because when people ask me that, how come you didn't repeat the same with your children or try to raise them in a similar way, I'm telling them that it's a tremendous amount of sacrifice from the parents,
Well,
it obviously takes dedication and a lot from the child as well. But in my view, it's a lot bigger sacrifice from the parents. And not just because of the challenges that I particularly had to face that maybe I wouldn't have to face today, but even without it, just the effort of sacrifices and the sacrifices of giving up their lives, so to say, in not going to movies, in not going out for dinners with friends, in not being able to buy a car or a lot of these things that their peers, their friends would do. They dedicated all their time and effort and resources in helping my chess career grow. And that was huge and very, very difficult for them.
Without a doubt, family had, as you said, mom and dad, and I'm sure other family members sacrificed many of the things that they would like to have focused on in their own lives just to make sure, that you had the ample opportunity and were on the same playing ground as everyone else. And that's saying a lot about the love and the dedication and the caring that they had for you. We're going to take a quick pause to remind listeners that you're tuned to 90.5 WICN, Jazz Plus for New England. You can follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Listen online at WICN.org. This is The Public Eye. I'm Al Vone, your host. My guest this week is author and chess master Susan Polgar. Her new book is Rebel Queen, The Cold War, Misogyny, and the Making of a Grandmaster. And I didn't point it out earlier on Susan, but I want to mention to people that to this day, now you're living here in this country, and we'll talk a little bit about that, but you are still the only female to earn all six, and I'm not familiar because I don't play chess, but the six crowns, triple crown, world crowns, all the top, I guess what you would call it, all the top titles that one can earn in the game of chess. That alone, that has to be very rewarding that, in spite of all the challenges, in spite of what you had to go through, that as you look back, that fulfillment, that saying that, it was a lot of work, it was a lot of sacrifice, but, look what I've accomplished. And that paved the ground for many other women, correct?
Yes, indeed. I'm very proud of what I have accomplished, and it's definitely very fulfilling. What I'm most proud of is earning, as the first woman ever in history, breaking the gender barrier and earning the men's grandmaster's title. And I remember growing up as a child, as a teenager, I was told countless times that women cannot become a grandmaster. It's beyond their ability, intellect. And I never understood why there would be such limitations just because of my gender. And that's what kept me going, that I felt that I'm representing all the women that are being told so. And I wanted to prove, not just for myself, but really to the world, to all the other women, that if I can do it, anybody else can. And I'm very proud that after I earned the title in January 1991, since now we have 42 women in the world who hold the Grandmaster title. And it's still, of course, not the numbers we'd like to see, because there are over 1,800 people who have the title and only 42 women, but it's a good start, and I'm hoping that in future years it will balance out even more.
Were you still living in Europe when you achieved all this?
Yes, I moved to the U.S. in 1994, so I was already a grandmaster when I moved here, although I won the last of my world championship titles already when I was living in the U.S. And, as you mentioned earlier, I'm the only person, man or woman, who has all the six major titles, being a world champion in all formats, that real fast blitz, the rapid and the classical time controls, winning the Olympiad gold medal, both individual and team, as well as being the number one ranked player in the world.
Now, I didn't realize until I started reading the book that across the U.S. anyway, that in many colleges, this is a sport. And for many years, for over a decade, 14 years to be exact, you were coaching young girls in the art of chess. So I'm going to assume here that Women are making their mark. Women are slowly, as you said, it's not taking place as fast as, you know, as perhaps as you'd like. But, you know, the game is obviously world renowned, but women are really making their mark both abroad and here in this country. So many young women must look up to you.
That's very much so indeed. And especially the Susan Polgar Foundation, which is a 501c3 nonprofit, focuses a lot on giving opportunities for girls. But as of my coaching career, actually, I was the first woman to coach men's Division I.
Wow.
So that's a different, that's an institute, the Susan Polgar Institute for Chess Excellence, which is commonly referred to as SPICE. That's independent from the foundation. And unlike the foundation that, while that a lot of events for both boys and girls, it emphasizes girls, the SPICE, the Institute, does not actually. And while it also has girls and women, of course, as in the program, in the students, it prides itself that, you know, I was the only woman who was the head coach in any of the other chess programs for chess, men's Division I. And not only that, I was the only woman. My teams, my students won more national titles, world titles, Olympiad titles than all the other male coaches combined. At one point, we won 7 straight national titles, meeting everybody.
So you certainly proved yourself, no question about it, which leads me to the next question. Was it easier here when you came to the United States? Did you find that that they accepted you? They recognized your talent. They recognized your achievements. And, rather than get bogged down, as you talk about, what it was like back in Hungary with the sexism and everything else, was it just easier, Susan, to make your mark here in the U.S.?
Yes, definitely. When I first came to the U.S. Just to visit and to play and compete in 1985, that was such a drastic contrast between what I experienced in Hungary at the time and all the support and the encouragement and the media, positive media attention that I got. It was very heartwarming that, wow, this is how it can be as well. Now, one thing I'd like to emphasize, though, that when I'm talking about all the challenges and difficulties and roadblocks back in Hungary, I'm talking about the Cold War era. Mm. And when in 1988, my sisters and I, as a national team, basically won the Chess Olympiad and made history, all of a sudden, overnight, everything changed. And while being the black sheep before 1988, once that event happened and we brought home the gold medal for the country, all of a sudden we became the Golden Girls, and all that ended. Even shortly before the Cold War ended in 89 in Hungary. So I'd certainly want to differentiate with the pre-1988 and post-1988 back in Hungary. Then after that, we got all the support we could imagine.
That's terrific, but it's almost you think to yourself, why did it take so long? What changed? I'm sure society itself changed. People found that they would look at the situation in a different light and say, why not? They've got the talent. They've made the sacrifices. So that's great. So it's, in other words, if someone is a female chess master in various parts of the world other than the United States, then today they would be recognized for those talents. And I guess it's fair to say that was groundbreaking on your part. You kind of broke down barriers for many women today. As it stands today, I know you're living here in this country, down in Florida. Do you still get people reaching out to you from all over the world, just wanting advice, maybe asking for advice, but also insight into the game, but more importantly, moral support?
Absolutely, I'm getting a lot of messages to social media or email or different, or when I'm going to events, I'm being approached by a lot of young girls or their parents on how did I do it, how did I get there, and what advice I would have. That's pretty common. I have also written a lot of different instructional chess books. And done many videos as well, mostly technical. Obviously, the new book I just released, Rebel Queen, is different. It's more of an inspirational story, encouraging young girls, but not just girls and not just in chess. But in general, the message of the book is that if you find your passion, you want it badly enough, you're willing to work hard enough for it, you will succeed. That's ultimately the message. And basically, my life story is the testament to that, because I don't feel anything special at birth. I think it's pretty much 99% about the hard work and passion that I put in.
Yeah, just to follow up with what you just stated, the book Rebel Queen is not about the technical aspects of the game of chess. Susan's book is really a human interest story, but a motivational story, an inspirational story of the challenges she went through, as she's been discussing from an early start. Hey, I got to ask this question, Susan. I mean, you... here in this country, and I don't know about other countries, but I know here, from the time that someone is athletic, has a unique talent, in especially in athletics, football, baseball, hockey, whatever it may be, you have the potential in this country of moving on to what they call the pro level, when big money, notoriety, fame, fortune, you call it whatever you want to call it, is out there. Does the same hold true in the game of chess, especially when you reach that, that pinnacle, the grandmaster? Is there a lot at stake here in terms of money?
Yes, there is a lot more than it used to be. And that is millions of dollars. The top players make millions of dollars every year.
Wow.
But not in the hundreds of millions or 8 digits in some of the other sports, or at least not yet.
Yeah. Well, but at the same token, at least you don't have to worry about, injuring yourself to the point that it's going to, affect you for the rest of your life. I mean, sometimes when you look at some of these contact sports, year after year getting banged around, I mean, no matter how much money, it doesn't, you can't replace, what you were born with. So, I mean, there's that aspect of it too.
Indeed, you're making a good point that it may be worthwhile to make less. Still decent money, but less, but not risking your health.
Exactly. I'm trying to think, when I, as I said earlier, when I was younger, many, many years ago, I remember following it with Boris. I can't remember his last name, but the what resonates with me after all these years, that there was and I think he was Russian, Boris
Spassky.
There you go. I mean, his name was splattered all over the papers, the news, that he had won another championship. So I'm thinking, boy, this is a big sport over there. There's I guess what I'm saying is it's always been very big in Europe, right?
Oh, yes, it has been. And traditionally, the so-called Soviet chess school was dominating. And all the way from after the end of World War II until Bobby Fischer came along, they dominated all the championships, all the Olympiads. They were ruling chess. And that's why it was so sensational when Bobby Fischer single-handedly, without having a big team of coaches and trainers and helpers like the Soviet, like Boris Spassky and the others. Basically, an American who was very passionate about chess and worked very hard at it and defeated the entire Soviet system. Yeah. That's why it was such a huge story back in the 1970s.
Yeah, I remember that. Fisher's name was, you're right, synonymous after that. You know, he had overcome what many people thought, you know, well, you can't beat the chess masters from, like you said, especially Russia. And single-handedly, he basically, you know, did that. In the closing moments that we have, I have to ask, and maybe it was one of the drawbacks as to why I didn't, you know, get any further with, you know, with my escapade into chess, is that this is a very cerebral sport, is it not? I mean, as we talked about, you know, you don't have to worry about getting batted around on a playing field, but you really, there's a methodology, and you really have to use your intelligence, correct?
Absolutely. It's primarily a mental game. Obviously, it requires a lot of thinking, a lot of focus, a lot of concentration, a lot of judgment calls, a lot of calculated risk-taking, creativity, calculation, obviously. And in the preparation to a game, it requires also a lot of research and analytical skills, problem-solving skills, and memorizing some of those things. So it's a very complex game that actually develops the intellect, develops the young person's mind. And therefore, chess is very often in many schools in this country, and in some schools even it's a mandatory subject to develop the mind of the young children.
Yeah.
It's a great tool to do so without much expense, without any risks. And I personally think that chess should be part of our curriculums in every school. Not necessarily to be every child a competitive player,
right,
but
right.
To use all the tools that chess gives to young people. And that's what my foundation is about, after all, is to spread that message and give opportunities for young people to develop themselves through chess.
Well, let's hope that happens. But I know now why I failed, and it was that cerebral part, and that's always been the thing that's held me back. But that's okay. There's plenty of people that are going forward, and folks like yourself that are making a name for themselves and putting chess, on the national scene. Again, the book is Rebel Queen: The Cold War, Misogyny, and the Making of a Grandmaster. My guest has been Grandmaster and author Susan Polgar. Susan, real quickly before we close out, if people want to pose questions to you or just get more information about the foundation, how can they do that?
They can just go to susanpolgar.com. That's my website. And from there on, there is an immediate link to the foundation.
Terrific. Again, I want to thank Susan Polgar, author of Rebel Queen and Grandmaster Chess Player. Thank you so much. For the tuning in, we want to thank you, too, our listeners, for tuning into The Public Eye. Any questions about the broadcast, you can give us a call here at the studios at WICN. Our main number is 508-752-0700. You can pose any comments, questions, or feedback to me directly. Certainly welcome that. That's Al Vona, V-U-O-N-A, at WICN.org. For The Public Eye, this is Al Vona. Thank you so much.